It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us once again. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk about this subject matter, which is so many folks, as we well know, will leave their home, their house, their family property, land I'm talking about, mm-hmm. with a house on it, potentially, to their, you know, three children.
Mm-hmm.
Or they will leave it to their two children, but the children of their deceased daughter.
Right.
Okay, so you have kind of a blended situation in terms of the relationship between the testator, the giver, the mm-hmm. the person who is making out the will, and the heir. Okay, but the bottom line is that most folks will leave their property to a combination of heirs. And I would say that the majority of the time, thank goodness, the majority of the time, these heirs agree what they want to do with the property.
Mm-hmm.
They want to sell it. One of the heirs wants to buy out the other heirs. They get an appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
They operate in good faith with each other until they can make these very significant decisions in terms of paying the taxes, the insurance. And they move through the process of agreeing how to resolve the fact that they own this property with mm-hmm. one of their relatives.
Right. Okay.
Now, we've talked about on the program that this is known as tenants in common ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They each own a part of the property, and yet they own a whole of the property. It's an interesting type of ownership in the state of North Carolina.
Right.
But the bottom line is that they each have an undivided interest in the property. Now, the next thing that can occur in files such as this is that now they do not agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of them just simply thinks the property is worth a whole lot more, or one of them will not agree to sell. One of them is on the property to the exclusion of the others, and is exercising control and dominion over the property, even though, as in my fact scenario, they own only a third of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these situations that develop, and our listeners probably are asking, well, what in the world happens if two or three or four people inherit property and then they can't agree how to settle the title on that?
Right.
Now, sometimes, I know I'm rattling on here, Ben, but sometimes people just simply agree to keep it in mm-hmm. the thirds. And they share the property in a certain way. You know, maybe it's a beach house or, mm-hmm. you know, a beach camp out like where we live on Highway 24. Lots of family camps out mm-hmm. that way mm-hmm. in the Broad Creek area. And, of course, you know, the bottom line is that those families own it, tenants in common, but they all share it, okay, mm-hmm. during the year. Well, that's fine. But if for some reason a conflict develops, then we're going to have to get involved. And the way that that occurs is through what the law calls a petition with the superior court, the clerk of court, to partition or part out, if you will, the property. And this is an absolute right of any undivided interest owner to petition the court to say, look, I want this property divided. Either you buy me out or I buy you out. We are not in agreement as to how this property is going to be managed. And we've got to have court intervention here to direct us and to settle, if you will, this dispute
mm-hmm.
as to the integrity of this property. And the law greatly encourages this because real property, which is what we're talking about here, land and homes and
right.
things of that nature, you know, we want these properties to be at their highest and best use. And when the family feud is going on,
mm-hmm.
then sometimes the taxes don't get paid, the property doesn't get maintained, it goes into disrepair. The insurance premium doesn't get paid, and then a hurricane comes through. You know, you see these properties, don't you, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
When we're all driving around on a Sunday afternoon, you'll see a house that's in just horrible disrepair. You wonder what in the world's going on, or a property that's just been sitting there forever and ever and ever, and you wonder what's happening. Sometimes that's the case. These are, quote, air properties owned by folks with tenants in common interest, and they've been unable to agree who is going to step forward and take care of that property.
Yeah, I think that's actually more common than probably most people know, and I think a lot of people are surprised that, you know, say you've got four people that inherited a property, and one of them wants to sell, that they can do this. A lot of people don't know that they can.
They do not.
Petition.
They do not. Our listeners and many of our clients have to seek good advice from us. We've been involved this week where we have any number of these partitioning actions in our office right now. Wes handles the hearings on those, and so Wes, I'll turn it over to you at this point. But the bottom line is that our listeners need to know that there is a way out, and the sooner the better. Because, of course, what happens with undivided interest is that they become further undivided, you see.
Right.
Three people becomes five people, becomes 10 people. And this is when you really can get into a very cumbersome situation. We have a couple of those in the office as well, where it has, you know, really gone down the line, and we're talking about many, many heirs. But, you know, they can be handled. And the court is going to stand behind the petitioner on this, because we want to get that property back up and running.
Now, when somebody inherits, in your scenario, say you have three kids that inherit a property, for example, or three heirs, and one of them wants to sell, does that often come up right then? I mean, at the point of inheritance? I mean,
comes up during the administration of the estate fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's usually some type of trigger. It could be the one child who receives their percentage interest in the property really wants the money out of the property.
Right.
You know, you can't go buy a loaf of bread with a one-third interest in a piece of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes folks are in a position where they want their money. And, you know, sometimes that spins off into negotiations with the other co-owners. And as a result of that, maybe we work out a resolution. So, hopefully there's an agreement to buy out that, for example, one-third owner at maybe fair market value based on getting an appraisal. Maybe they just don't see the eye to eye, and then we end up, you know, having to go to the partition proceeding.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's a situation where it takes a little bit of time, and maybe one party is a little disgusted about the other not contributing at all, not putting any money into the repairs or the insurance or the taxes for years and years, and you know, we just get to the point where we have to go forward to put this before the clerk of court to have that ownership broken up.
How long a procedure is that? I mean, what's that like?
Well, you know, these petitions to partition take all kinds of different
twists and turns.
Yes. I mean, you know, sometimes you have the partition action that is very quick, and it may be a 60-day period of time, and it's basically over. I have one in particular that's on my desk right now. We're on year five. Now that one's millions of dollars. I mean, there's lots of parties involved, and there is it's in Carteret County. It's one of the most complicated Carteret County historical messes there's ever been. And frankly, if these family members did not come to us to get this started, it would, as Cecil said, would get worse and worse and worse. And the reason why is because, you know, people pass, and then their percentage interest then passes to two or three people, and then they pass, and then to, you know, two or three more people, and it just multiplies over the years. It becomes more complicated. So there's all types of them. I would say the one that takes 5 years is not the norm. Normally you're in, you know, a 60-day, 90-day period of time, and we're pretty much done with the court proceeding. Of course, there's all types of divisions. I mean, we could be going to a division by sale, or we could be going toward a division by actually dividing the property in kind.
Mm-hmm.
We have just maybe
physically could divide.
Well, and that's where it starts. Mm-hmm. The clerk of court does not have the authority to enter an order requiring a sale of the property unless the determination is made that the property can't be divided without damage to the value of each interest or really the whole.
Right.
So we start with defaulting to an actual division in kind. And that process is, you know, it takes a little more time to do that as compared to, you know, a sale, because three commissioners have to be appointed.
Right.
Normally this is going to be maybe a lawyer, maybe a realtor, maybe a surveyor, something along those lines, people who know real property. And a determination is made as to how the property may be split out to try to equalize the shares, you know, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about the division in kind, we're normally talking about, you know, acreage. You know, we're talking about, a lot that can be divided. We're not talking about, you know, a beach house, or we're not talking about, you know, a residence, because obviously you can't, cut a residence down the middle.
But you might be talking about a mix of properties, though, right? I mean,
you
like
could
a,
be.
Might be a shopping center over here, or an office building here, a farm over here. I mean,
you could be. And then it obviously gets more and more complicated as it relates to, you know, what the value of each of these different mm-hmm. aspects of the property may be. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, sometimes the commissioners, they do take into consideration what each party may want. I mean, obviously, let's say if we have one of the owners owns the lot right next door, we're probably not going to give that owner the lot furthest away from the property they already own.
Right.
That type of thing could be that, mama gave me a little piece of land, and that's where I built my house, and that's where I am right mm-hmm. now, and I own that tract.
Yeah.
It just has to be, it happens to be surrounded by my brothers
else's.
And sisters.
Yeah.
So we're not going to give that person, you know, the property that's way off over in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're probably just going to make their lot bigger.
Contiguous.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So anyway, this brings up a lot of issues, and a lot of you may have questions about it. You can call in right now at 247-7282 if you'd like to call in and ask questions of Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. You also go to harvellandcollins.com and find past shows that also address this subject, and this one will be posted there soon too. So take advantage of that and give us a call. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. Your calls are welcome at 247-7282, and Ross will put you through, and we'll be happy to entertain your questions. And with Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins.
Ben, I think it's interesting. Let's go back and just repeat a couple of the big picture items here. You know, when property is left to the, quote, family,
mm-hmm.
and it isn't organized by the family, so that they know who's going to own what and have responsibility for what, then let's keep in mind within a short period of time, potentially, we can have every element of the substantive law involved.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who then die and don't have a will.
Mm-hmm.
We have minors who inherit property.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who inherit the property who are in the midst of a divorce and have a spouse involved mm-hmm. in the title to the property. Because as we know in the state of North Carolina, there are spousal interests mm-hmm. in property owned by, there are interests owned by the spouse in North Carolina.
Right.
There can be people who are incompetent or who become injured and need a power and don't have a power of attorney. I mean, as you begin to see here, divorce law, guardianship law, estate law, every conceivable possibility exists to occur that then this property is subject to all of those kinds of contingencies. So it really is imperative that folks come to an agreement on their lands early on after mm-hmm. they inherit them, seek resolution on how we're going to handle this property, sell
right.
it, and divide the money, of course, is right. a possibility. One of the children take the property over. Two of the three take the property over, whatever they decide. And then the other big picture item for us to emphasize again this morning, Ben, is that there is a way out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think our listeners do not know that. You mentioned during the break that you had, you know, a friend who had said that he was in a property with a relative and mm-hmm. he wasn't real sure that they were going to be able to, quote, agree about how they were going to resolve their ownership in that property. Well, if you can't agree after a reasonable amount of time, then it's time for someone to step up to the plate and force the matter.
Right.
To agreement. And there is yeah. absolutely a procedure in the state of North Carolina to do that.
Yeah, you had described it during the break as a roadmap. There is a way, to path to follow for that in two different ways. One we talked about was the family LLC. If you were inheriting property, then you would have a majority rule kind of decision.
Right.
But that's what gets people. They think that it's always going to be majority rule, but it's not.
Yeah, it's a confusing concept when, you know, you're talking about, okay, you've inherited this percentage interest in this property from your family member, and, you know, there's kind of deadlock or gridlock with regard to how the property is going to be used. In just about everything else we deal with in society, it's majority rule. It's okay, what do most of the people want to do? But that's not the way it works with the tenants in common property. Of course, if you inherit 50% of this particular piece of property, whatever it may be, yeah, you have the right to sell your 50%. But the problem there is that who is going to want to then step into your shoes
yes,
and own
right.
50% with the other owners? So what we're trying to reach is the highest and best use of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, by bringing the petition to partition, that breaks up that that tenants in common ownership and allows people to go forward, making decisions as it relates to whatever they end up with as far as the property goes, if it's divided in kind, you know, because it's theirs, or, a forced sale, which would, again, when I say forced sale, that's a little bit strong because in many cases we don't go to a public sale, which
right.
is like a foreclosure sale.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk of court has the right to enter an order for a private sale, which is just a listing of the property.
Mm-hmm.
There's a commissioner appointed, and the commissioner then selects a realtor, and the realtor then lists the property, and it's put on the MLS, and it's advertised.
It's sold like any other property.
And the average buyer out there, the buyer doesn't know this is when they're making their offer. This is part of a partition proceeding. But the parties can't block the sale either.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say if you have a tenants in common owner that owns a part of the property and they want to go list the property, mm-hmm. they go list it with a realtor and haven't really spoken with their other, you know, co-owners. You get a buyer to come along and then all of a sudden we need a deed signed by the other co-owners. There's no way to make them sign that deed.
Right, right.
So we could go through, you know, we've dealt with this many times before. We can go through this process where a party thinks that they have the right maybe because they own more than half of the property or half of the property or mm-hmm. more, they have more percentage than the other owners, that they can go ahead and force the sale.
Or they're living on it.
But then when they move up, they get to the closing table or close to it, all of a sudden they realize, wow, I need the signature of my other co-owners and their spouse. Are they going to sign off on it? And in many cases, that just doesn't come to pass. So, the partition, you know, allows you to structure this proceeding to a closing just like a normal sale of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing different other than the fact that who signs the deed? The commissioner.
Right.
And the commissioner has the authority by the clerk of court to sign the deed and has a duty to sign the deed to transfer that title consistent with the orders of the court. Then the money comes in from the sale to the commissioner. Then the commissioner divides it out based on the percentages. And there we go. We okay. move right along down the line. Pretty clean in many cases.
More to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law. Again, harvellandcollins.com is where you're going to find past shows. You can find out more information about the firm, too. And we'll have more to come in just a bit. And again, you can call them at 726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. But you can also call in right now, 247-7282. Got a few minutes left.
Yep. Ben, let's go back a moment. Wes was talking about this, quote, commissioner's deed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make our listeners aware once again. Let's suppose that there's a minor that's inherited a percentage of this property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an appointment of a guardian.
Right.
And the guardian is at the table. Let's suppose that there's an incompetent. Let's suppose that, you know, one of the persons who inherited the property has a guardian pursuant to an incompetency proceeding. Well,
mm-hmm.
the guardian is at the table at the procedure. Let's suppose that we're dealing with, you know, one of the parties that owns the property is in the midst of, you know, a knockdown, drag out divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the commissioner's deed is the commissioner's deed. The monies can be held in escrow over with the divorce lawyers for them to finally get the settlement that they
mm-hmm.
Are appropriate, that they think is appropriate for their clients. But we're not going to hold up the sale of the property.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So all of those sub issues mm-hmm. that we spoke about, you know, minors, incompetencies, divorces, unagreement by a party to particularly sign a deed, all of those issues you see get forced,
mm-hmm.
okay, at a petition to partition, and there is resolution. Because there's this concept in the law that those issues are ancillary to
right.
to the larger issue of the petition to partition and make this property useful. The minor's proceeds can be placed in the guardianship account for the minor.
Right. Right.
The incompetence proceeds can be placed with his guardian. The divorce couple's proceeds
mm-hmm.
can be placed in escrow with their lawyers until they have resolution. But guess what? In the meantime, the big picture,
mm-hmm.
which is the property, which we want to get back to its highest and best use, there is slowly but surely resolution.
Hmm.
So I know we have just a little bit of time left, but you know, another topic we can talk about that's a big part of partition actions
mm-hmm.
when we come back next week is the offsets and credits, the claims.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of it because in many cases we're talking about a certain party, obviously, that maybe stepped forward, cost them some attorney's fees up front,
right.
where the statute allows them to get those back
yeah.
from off the top.
Paid the taxes,
maintenance, insurance, these type of things. There's certain statute limitations that apply to some aspects of that, so we can't look back forever.
Mm-hmm.
So in any petition to partition, or most of them anyway, that's a big topic that needs to be understood, I think. So probably
sure.
next week we'll spin into that and talk a little bit about how that process works before the clerk.
Okay. And again, as always, if you have questions, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins, make that appointment at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.